My name is Ian Koss, and what you're listening to is a collection of songs and conversations about every marriage in my family that ended in divorce, which is most of them. Part 1, my parents, Ellen and Tom. So in full disclosure, I'll tell you that I already talked to my dad on this subject.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hey there, it's me.
But the reason I tell you that, I thought it was funny that, you know, when I broached the topic...
You're sort of doing something on divorce?
You two had totally opposite reactions.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, this is really an awkward topic for me, Ian.
I'm sure. That doesn't surprise me.
Maybe this is not surprising to you, but...
Quite honestly.
You know, his response was...
You know, it's like... 60 years old, and I really haven't figured this stuff out.
Really? You want to talk about what?
Yeah.
And your response was, all right, name the place and time, so.
Yeah. Also, I think that, you know, don't forget, he went through a divorce as a kid.
Yeah.
And I mean, the ugliest of ugly, and I didn't.
I don't know.
Well, can I ask you some questions, and you can... You can just let me know?
I think that he and I both have really different points of view on the whole mess.
Right.
If you will.
I should say before we start that I like to be candid in my answers, and I don't know if I can really do that, which is, you know, I don't know how useful that is.
My parents divorced when I was 8 years old. I was young enough that I don't have a lot of clear memories of what happened, but old enough that I was definitely watching and listening and learning from what was happening. I think that's why I pushed to have this conversation. Even when I knew that parts of it would be ugly, and even when my dad made it pretty clear he did not want to talk about it, I felt like I had a right to know consciously at least, the lessons and examples that I had almost certainly internalized as a little kid. Let me tell you a little bit about my parents, stuff that you won't pick up just by hearing their voices. Today, they live about 10 miles away from each other in two small towns of western Massachusetts. My father, Tom, is a farrier, which is the person who puts shoes on horses. He drives a truck with a forge in the back that's hot enough to melt solid iron. My mother, Ellen, used to work as a paramedic in town. Then she taught 8th grade science, and to this day, I will meet former students of hers who tell me that she is the best teacher they've ever had. I take these things for granted, like I think most children take their parents' lives for granted. It's easy to forget that in all likelihood, none of these things would be true if my parents had never met and had two children, my brother and I. You know, in a lot of families, this sort of like, how did your parents meet is a familiar topic of conversation, something that's part of the family lore, but it was never part of our family lore. I don't even think I know how you guys met.
Oh, well.
Tom had been working in Hinsdale, New Hampshire.
And then I rode my bicycle down from there.
And he was out of a job. And
I would say that I was a little bit at loose ends at that point in my life.
And actually, I knew Eric.
My brother had gotten a job at Friends World College in Huntington, Long Island.
the creepy dorms were up top, and those were the ones that had been put there back during the Cold War.
I think I might have gotten some kind of job to do some maintenance work on the building.
What it boils down to is that there were these wacky army barracks that looked like they'd been put up in about 10 minutes.
And at that time, your mother returned from Kenya.
And a little bit extra crazy, because I'd really gone, I mean, I'd been gone for 2 years.
And she had gotten a very bad strain of malaria.
Oh, you know, high fever, vomiting.
I think she was a little delirious in some way.
Oh, I still had it.
You know, it's episodic, and it comes and goes. And
it isn't pretty.
She came back, and she stayed in that house where I was staying.
And the first day I met him, he had turned up in my kitchen, was the way I looked at it.
And she kind of made the first move, as I recall.
And he was eating this just absolutely magnificent sandwich. And he held up half of the sandwich and said, "Are you hungry? Would you like some?"
That's how we met.
Okay, you don't have to go into the carnal details here, but...
Okay. Well, it was kind of romantic. They had a fireplace there in the room, and it was you know, it was kind of a nice place.
The thing about Tom and me is that we actually have a ton of stuff in common, despite being so different.
We hung out, we got to know each other, and then...
There was just one fateful night. Oh, the rest is history.
She announced to me that she was pregnant.
Up to this point, my parents' narrative of events and their feelings about those events mostly agree. They met, they hung out, and without meaning to, they conceived a child, my older brother, Sebastian. Eventually, of course, their stories do begin to diverge. But it's not just a matter of two people telling stories to make themselves look good. It's two people who, long before they got divorced and long before they got married, were already seeing their relationship through the lens of very different past experiences, the experiences that they had grown up with. I'm curious what, you know, at that time in your life, what was the model in your mind of how marriage was supposed to work? Did as an institution, did it feel valuable or meaningful to you?
Well, so with me, yes. But it was also something that had been used as a weapon.
My parents were like textbook of what divorced parents should not do, you know, which is to basically make war on your ex and put what? Salt in the soil, you know, the way the Romans did in Carthage, you know. I mean, it was just a never-ending, nonstop war. And, you know, I think that that's a lot of what drew your mother and me together also, is that, we both had really troubled relationships with our fathers. I mean, your mother was just furious at her father for being a drunk and for just, you know, pissing away his talents the way that he did. It just, like, really infuriated her.
And my dad, you know, was really on a really bad downward spiral from the time I was born, say maybe when I was 14 or 15. So my mom, anytime she was stressed, so my mom would take me out in the car and drive around and explain to me how I was a mistake. And she hadn't planned to have me, and that she had been planning to leave my father, and she would laugh wryly, you know, "One of these days you're going to come home and I'm not going to be here. It's going to be just you and your dad." And
so you think if you hadn't been born, your mother would have divorced your father?
Oh, yeah. You know, she had kind of put things in motion, and then wham, she got pregnant.
And at that, because at that point, your siblings were practically out of the house. They were like well into high school.
Paul was 15, going on 16. Yeah. Yeah.
And then you came along.
Yeah. You know, and she really felt like that was the time. And so I guess for me, like, I was the generation where every single one of my friends, their parents got divorced before we were out of high school. And that was new. That was super new. So these were that was the first wave. And I remember being like partially proud that my family had managed to stay together and partially horrified, you know, because I mean, they did such a bad job being married to one another.
Yeah. So I think we were both wounded in some ways.
I'm curious how that conversation went when she told you she was pregnant with my brother.
I don't have a real great memory.
His immediate response was that I should get an abortion.
My father found out about it, and his immediate response was to get rid of it, you know, because he was convinced that your mother was trying to take advantage of me somehow or something.
So that was sort of the first chink.
Your mother decided she was going to keep the pregnancy, and she told me, you can either come with me or not, but either way, I'm going to keep this baby. And
my thought was, well, you know, that's fine. If you don't want to do this, I'll go my way and you can go your way. And for whatever reason, that wasn't okay with him.
I don't have any recollection of having the instinct of bolting, you know.
And I kept expecting him to leave.
And she made it very clear to me that there wouldn't be any consequences for me if I did, you know.
You know, I knew it was going to end badly.
And I decided to come with her and to stick around.
So keep going with the story then. You go to Tennessee, Sebastian is born, you wind up back in Massachusetts, I'm born.
Uh-huh.
At what point did...
And you were also unplanned.
Right.
I don't know if your mother ever told you that or not. 0-2.
I guess maybe the next thing I'm curious about is, when did the idea of getting married enter the conversation? Because I was at your wedding. I mean, I was already born. I was a couple years old. When did the conversation start to, I guess we should get married?
You should probably ask your mother that.
So it was her idea. It was her idea.
Totally her idea.
So we talked about it and decided that for tax purposes, it would be more sensible if we got married.
You know, I was perfectly content to live in sin, but your mother really wanted us to be married.
There was no proposal, there was no I love you and none of that stuff. I bought my own ring. Yeah, that's how that happened.
We did that, and then I don't know, maybe 3-4 years or even less after that.
I mean, we barely were married for 2 years. It was like 18 months.
She asked for a divorce. So,
I mean, I never understood why Tom stayed with me. I really didn't. I mean, it was always a mystery to me because I don't think he ever loved me. He never said so.
Mm-hmm.
I think that she would tell you that I didn't love her and that I was just sticking around to be with you guys. And there's probably some truth to that.
And there were times I wondered, late at night, whether he was coming home. And I'm sure that there were times when he was thinking to himself, shit, if I just keep driving, it would be easier that way, you know?
But I never would have ended it because I didn't want to put you and Sebastian through what I went through, you know, even if the marriage was not ideal.
But I just knew that I was hurting him and he was hurting me. And that despite the fact that we had two beautiful children together, we would be better apart.
Yeah.
And I was really sure of it.
When your mother told me she wanted to end the marriage, I was not expecting that.
He went completely bonkers.
I mean, now we're getting into like stuff that's a little uncomfortable.
We agreed that we would not get lawyers.
You know, it's like he said, she said, and
you know, he wanted a lot of stuff.
You know, I mean, divorce is never a pretty thing.
Like, this is a little weird.
You know, we had that bump in the road when she took out a restraining order.
We got into a pretty serious physical altercation.
Your mom and I had a fight about something.
And I called the police.
And I, in the heat of the moment and you know, not being very smart, I put my finger on the button, you know, and said, no, don't call the cops.
That was bad.
And I got in my truck and I remember stopping. There was a payphone and calling her, you know, and saying, I hope everything's cool and everything. But apparently the cops showed up.
And that's how we ended up with the restraining order.
A restraining order against me.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, didn't make me any friends.
That was probably the low point in the whole thing.
I didn't know any of this stuff before, about the police coming, the restraining order. And really, it just keeps going.
He gave me a scare.
There's the story of the actual divorce proceedings.
I think it took, close to a year.
He called me and said, just so you know, I'm not going to sign it.
The day when my mom apparently called all the local paramedics on duty to show up in the courtroom.
She was working this crazy job on the ambulance.
He had his five bearded crazy people, and I had probably 15 uniformed men.
There was the question of whether my parents might move away from each other.
For a little while, she was making noises about leaving the area.
Or whether they could date other people.
He said, I want to have some say in who is living with my children.
It's pretty rare that their stories directly contradict, but they don't really match either. They focus on different moments or different details. Details that align with the way they see the world.
Oh, it's so weird, Ian.
I'm not going to psychoanalyze your mom.
All of us have ways that we deal with uncomfortable truths. For my dad, I think that means downplaying, understating, or simply forgetting the parts that don't sit right or that he doesn't want to say out loud. For my mom, I think it's more about dramatizing and embellishing, making the whole thing into such a great story that you can almost forget what it even means. I know these behaviors well because I do them too. They're things I learned from my parents that they probably learned from their parents.
In retrospect, I respect your mother for ending the marriage when she did, because it wasn't easy. For anybody involved, you know, but she felt like this is what she had to do to make it right. But at the time, I was pretty devastated, and I think part of it had to do with the fact that you and Sebastian were just about the same ages as Eric and I were when our parents divorced.
But I mean, that was his experience because he went through, you know, multiple stepmothers and, you know, and there was no hints of a family unit, you know.
Both of us tried our best to not repeat the mistakes that my parents made, you know, and that's, again, that's a very low bar.
I mean, in hindsight, I'm really grateful that you guys split up when you did and went on to choose your own lives and your own homes and your own partners again. And, I guess, you know, when I look at, you know, the children of other marriages that held on bitterly, you know, that did stay together for the kids.
Yep.
The end result doesn't actually look better to me. It often looks worse.
Yeah. No, because you spend all that time growing up having this terrible behavior models for you. Yeah. You know, like I lived that with my parents.
But what it makes me think is you had sort of opposite but mirrored traumas.
Yeah.
And so it's like when it came to that moment of do we stick this out or do we call it quits? It seems in a way you were both trying to avoid what your own parents had done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. No, I think that's very accurate. But because they were opposites, there was no happy medium. And I just had to hope I was right.
Do you remember how Sebastian and I responded to you guys getting divorced? Because I have no memory of this.
Well, that's interesting you should mention that, because that's one of the few scenes that I really can picture. There was a therapist there at the Worthington Health Center. Can you picture that?
Yep.
Up on the hill in Worthington?
Yeah.
We brought you guys there to tell you that we were getting divorced. I remember that these tears just sort of spontaneously popped out of your eyes. And you just like, I don't know. It was unlike you because you're quite stoic in a lot of ways, but you just like cried instantly. And I can still see that now.
My fear is always like, what awful things are you carting around from both of us that are negative behaviors that you don't even know about? Or maybe you do, but you don't realize that they're there. And when you act out on them, will cause harm to your relationship.
Yeah, I think about that too sometimes.
You know? Yeah. I mean, because it's hard not to become your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Six years ago, I got married. My parents were there, and they both spoke. My dad, reading from prepared notes on yellow legal pad.
Two atoms move to share their electrons on equal terms.
And my mom, riffing her way through an anecdote with totally over-the-top gestures.
And huge doe eyes and blink, blink. And like everyone's playing with the puppies. And she's
as always, they were their very different selves. It's hard to view your parents' relationship as a mistake when it's the only reason you could possibly exist. But I think I've always known that my parents made mistakes and that given the chance, I would act differently. Maybe find a way to express myself more fully or make decisions with more care and compassion. What I really didn't know until now is that they were trying to do the same thing. To avoid the mistakes of their parents, to take the models they'd grown up with and the examples they'd internalized and do better.
Winter calls a clear horizon.
As At the time I decided to get married, every living relative who had ever been married had also been divorced. My parents, of course, all my aunts and uncles on both sides, my only living great uncle, my only living grandparent, all had been married and all had been divorced, some twice. To this day, I don't know what made me think I could do better, or even if I knew what better looked like. Is it just ignorance or overconfidence that made me think I could hold this commitment that none of them had? Or is it possible that we can learn from our elders and take a different path? I can't know that yet, but I've been talking...
Hello?
Hey, Ian.
...to every one of those relatives who was there that day.
How are you?
Hi, Ian.
Hi, how are you?
...about their marriages.
At that moment, all my friends were getting married.
I really thought I would be with him for the rest of my life.
...and their divorces.
The fuse was lit.
I think it takes a lot of courage to change the direction of your life.
I was sort of expecting it to be more fulfilling.
Just like with my parents... There are pieces of these stories I knew already.
There was so much compensating, really on both sides, for the other person not being the person that you really wanted them to be.
But many pieces that I didn't.
I get very cold. I withdraw.
And there are other pieces. Pieces that I've been carrying around with me this whole time, even if I didn't know it.
Oh, God, marriage really doesn't mean a thing to me.
I didn't want to pass that legacy on to my kids.
They did a lot of stuff to fuck you up, but you also get gifts.
You sort of start to feel like you're good and sufficient reasons. Maybe they really weren't so good and sufficient for who you actually become.
These are the conversations I'll be sharing in the rest of the series. It's called... Forever is a Long Time. In part two, I talk to my grandmother about her marriage, the one my father described as a very low bar, the one he was trying desperately not to repeat. sun and everything under the sun. For a second it's clear that you are the one. Would you do me the favor? Remember this behavior. Would you do me the favor?